Hey, Truth Seekers, good evening. Mike Malloy here. Thanks for tuning in. It is about 7 past the hour. You know, once again, I've got to start the program tonight with a comment about just when you think it couldn't get any crazier, the right wing in this country takes it to another level, and it's happening again. This concerns President Obama's proposed address to students coming up Tuesday, the day after they come back from Labor Day holiday. The right wing is treating this as though it's an address by Joseph Goebbels to the Nazi faithful. I'm losing a vocabulary necessary to describe this madness, and it's just across the spectrum. Everybody from this crazed Tony Perkins at the Family Research Council, isn't that a great name, Family Research Council, to members of Congress, to newspapers, to school boards. Got an email from I don't want to say her name. She didn't ask me not to say her name, but it's a little too crazy out there. I'll just tell you she's from Lebanon, Ohio. And she sent this in not just to me, but to a couple of other people. And here's what she said. While reading the news online today, I noticed that President Obama would be addressing students across the country this Tuesday, September 8th. While I was picking up my second grade son from school, I asked the school secretary, "Is our school participating?" She informed me that yes, they would, and that a paper would be coming about it tonight. I knew this wouldn't be good since I live in Warren County, Ohio. You remember the place that had the terror alert while counting votes on election night 2004? As soon as we arrived home, I looked through the backpacks of both my kids. My oldest is in fifth grade. Both of my children had the same form. It was a form explaining the event on Tuesday and offering parents who wanted to sign the form in order to excuse their children from this event. While I'm a strong supporter of President Obama and was never a supporter of President Bush, I never would have had my children excused from listening to or seeing a speech from President Bush. Why wouldn't a parent want their child to learn about government? Why wouldn't a parent want a president to motivate children to do their best? I'm not naive. I know a few reasons why, and they're ridiculous. Political indoctrination is one of my personal favorites. While I wish I could say that I'm shocked by the letter from the school, I am not, because once again, I live in Warren County, Ohio. Now, she sent in a copy of the, there's a P.S. I'm just so disappointed but not surprised that the school sent these letters home. And again, she asked, what is so wrong with the president encouraging the nation's children to do well in school? If a person doesn't want their children to be exposed to the president of the United States, why send them to a public school? I know that I do not want my children exposed to a religion. Consequently, I never send them to a religious school. Are we going to stop teaching government and civics? So here's the form that went home to children in this parent's school. It's from the Lebanon, Ohio City Schools, signed by Greg Tracy, the principal. Dear parents, we have received communication from the U.S. Department of Education and the Ohio Department of Education that President Obama will deliver a national address to pre-kindergarten through 12th grade students on Tuesday, September 8th at noon. The Department of Education has encouraged students of all ages to watch the address and also has communicated that President Obama is expected to challenge students to work hard. Oh, my. Set educational goals. Oh, my God. And take responsibility for their learning as the new school year begins. We've been informed the address will last approximately 20 minutes. If you would like your child to be excused from watching the address, please sign and return this form tomorrow or on Tuesday morning. If a student indicates on Tuesday that he or she would prefer not to watch the address, he or she will be excused to another location. Sincerely, Greg Tracy, Principal. President Obama is going to challenge students to work hard, challenge them to set their educational goals, and challenge them to take responsibility for their learning. Oh, my God. Did someone tell Glenn Beck about this? This might be the event that pushes him right over the brink. Faith in Pittsburgh writes, if anyone doubts we're a racist country, just listen to what parents are saying about President Obama's address to school students. And she's referring to stuff that's going on online. It doesn't surprise me at all. Racism runs deep in us. It flows in our blood. It's locked in our genes. It's in our very bones. Yes, some of us, like most of your audience, are conscious of racism and do not want to say, do, or believe racist things. But a significant percentage of our population is blatantly racist, and that's dangerous. I have my own doubts about Obama's policies. For example, he's not anywhere near where I want him to be when it comes to socializing health care, resources such as oil, financial security for all citizens, etc. But it has nothing whatsoever to do with his race. Racism is so blatant now that otherwise unremarkable people feel free to criticize Obama based on nothing but their hatred and fear of blacks. This president is their boogeyman. That's from Faith. Tony Perkins, the religious nut, one of these people who wants to literally destroy America, because this country is only as structured as our founding documents. That's all we are. We're a chunk of real estate with people from all over the world comprising the citizenship. The only thing that makes America America are our documents. That's it. The founding documents. There is nothing else. Tony Perkins wants to destroy America because he wants to destroy those documents and replace them with his version of the Bible. So he sends out this email and posts this on his website. The headline is, "Ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your president." And then he says, "Until the White House changed course last night," which is a goddamn lie. That was at the core of next week's lesson plans for America's elementary school children. Lesson plans? On Tuesday, President Obama is scheduled to deliver a live message to school children across the nation. As we reported yesterday, the speech will be accompanied by a worksheet produced by the Department of Education that called upon children to write about what they can do to help the president. Perkins, that's a goddamn lie, and you know it. Hell is waiting for you, you psychopath. And then he writes, "After a firestorm of criticism, the White House changed the core question to student asking about how they can achieve their short-term and long-term education goals." Listen how this diphthong writes. "In an online poll we started yesterday, already 94% of respondents," well, no kidding, Dick Tracy, it's your website, "think the president shouldn't even address the school children at all during school hours. The timing of the speech is certainly suspect, as he is embroiled in a very controversial policy debate in which he is losing ground." Oh, my God. And then he goes on and talks about the president's address to joint Congress coming up. Why do we tolerate people inside this country who are trying to destroy the country? Why? If all of a sudden a regiment of fully armed Russian soldiers landed on the beaches of South Carolina and stormed those little beach communities, and then bivouacked somewhere outside of Charleston to begin an assault, what would we do? Son of a bitch, how long would it take to absolutely wipe out this regiment of Russian soldiers? What would it take? 5 minutes? 30 seconds? What would it take? We have something just incredibly worse. We have everybody from Glenn Beck to Bill O'Reilly to Tony Perkins to the right-wing media trying to destroy America. And what are we doing about it? Nothing. We're sitting back on our asses and just letting this happen. Screams, I can hear the marching feet. We're moving into the street. Did you read the news today? They say the danger's gone our way. But I can see the fire still light. They're burning into
Hey, Truth Seekers, it's time for your humble and obedient servant, Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour, the madness of the right wing is a lot deeper than I thought it was. It is incurable, obviously. And they're destroying the country. And like I said, if we were invaded by an armed force who attempted to use violence to destabilize the country, we would eliminate them in half a heartbeat. These people are using clearly techniques that were perfected by the Nazis all those years ago, and using the Nazi model, and I hate to do it, but there's nothing else that compares in Western examples of how totalitarianism moves in. Using the Nazi model is what they're doing, and it's so crystal clear. I mean, Jesus, God, you don't have to. I mean, all you have to have is a barely working knowledge of what happened in Germany when Hitler became chancellor to understand what anyway. Well, first of all, Christy Bicknell is the woman who wrote to me from Lebanon, Ohio. She just sent me an email and said, you can use my name. I appreciate the courage, Christy, but we live in an asylum. Reinhardt in Hampton, Virginia writes, while it is sick, this whole attack on Obama addressing the kids, while it is sick, the implications are sinister beyond measure. Setting up a clear us-them dichotomy at the start of the public school year moves the teabag madness into the mainstream and a divide in the student group in every school that exempts on whatever reason other than absence, you know, exempts a kid from listening. These are Nazi tactics. Son of a bitch, is nobody paying any attention anymore? I mean, I know you are a truth seeker, and so am I. But this is, it may even be on the level with the kind of totalitarianism that Orwell wrote about. What they're doing in attacking the right wing, in attacking a simple delivery by the President of the United States to school kids to work hard, take responsibility, do your homework, eat your vegetables, brush your teeth. In challenging that, in setting up this madness, they're dividing kids. Kids who just want to goddamn go to school. I mean, when I was in elementary school, I would have been thrilled to have President Truman address kids and say, take care of what you're doing. Focus on what you're doing. To have the President of the United States. But you see, the President of the United States is a Negro. And this is what is stuck in these right-wing bastards' throats. It's like Germany in the 30s. If the leader of Germany would have been a Jew, it's the same thing, only worse. Republican Party Chairman Jim Greer of Florida is one of the people who has gone absolutely nuts on this. According to Jason Lincoln's writing at Huffington Post, he went just out of his mind and said that the president's address was nothing more than a dastardly inculcation into socialism and a viral spread of liberal propaganda. And Jason writes, naively, I imagine this would be a derangement confined to a few weird nobodies, but duh, I forgot, everyone's crazy now. So this matter has thus become a thing! Here's some of the highlights. Glenn Beck hit this early in a hurry, announcing that he would be countering Obama's address by airing what he calls a special one-hour broadcast next Tuesday on television on the indoctrination of your children. Naturally, a new wacko target, Van Jones, figured into Beck's remarks, along with a warning that the Republic's under attack. From a video that encourages kids to do homework and stuff? The National Review's Mark Stein told Rush Limbaugh's audience Wednesday that the video address was Obama's attempt to extend his cult of personality It should be noted that Stein was willing to concede that the tactics didn't quite rise to the level of Saddam Hussein. Restraint. The conservative fringe may paradoxically refer to Obama as a socialist and or a fascist, depending on the direction the wind is blowing that day. But thus far, they've drawn the line at calling him a Ba'athist. Like Saddam, Newsbusters' Mark Finkelstein likened the move of the president addressing children to Maoist China. Here's what he said. Say, here's an idea. President Obama's quotations on a variety of topics could be assembled in a small book and every citizen given one free of course, by the government. Citizens would then be encouraged to meet and discuss
what can we infer the president believes is important
in every aspect of life. Like Mao's Little Red Book. These are sick, sick people. They're destroying our country. What are we going to do about it? There's more. Don't go away.
Just had another cup of coffee. Here's Mike Malloy.
26 before the hour. So the President of the United States wants to inspire children to take responsibility, to learn, to pay attention to their education in school, to better themselves at a time when the educational levels of this country are in the toilet. I'm talking about primary and secondary school. Sure, the universities, the ones that cost $60,000 a year, $70,000, $80,000, yeah, they're still doing great. But this, the public education, this country has been under assault for the past 35 years by these right-wing Christian maniacs. And consequently, the education levels of the kids that are coming out of primary and secondary school is horrifying, just horrifyingly ignorant. In so many school districts now, you have to present religious superstition alongside science in order to satisfy these right-wing trolls. It's just astonishing. So more of what is going around out there in right-wing hell about Obama's speech, or a chat with the kids on Tuesday. Michelle Malkin, Crazy Eyes. Worried that for the first time in human history, school children will be motivated hypnotically to rise up and seize the means of production through the assignment of pointless busy work. Here's what she said. So when the Department of Education directs schools to gather children around the TV monitors for Obama's pep talk and then do this, create posters of their goals. Posters could be formatted in quadrants or puzzle pieces or trails marked with the labels personal, academic, community, country. Each area could be labeled with three steps for achieving goals in those areas. It might make sense to focus on personal and academic so community and country goals become more readily. Write letters to themselves about what they can do to help the president. These would be collected and redistributed at an appropriate later date by the teacher to make students accountable to their goals. Parents have every right to worry about their children being used as political guinea pigs for change. Michelle Malkin. And then there, who am I quoting here? At least Jason Lincoln's at HuffPo, Huffington Post. There are also examples of fringy types equating the outreach effort by the president to the civilian National Security Force and Hitler Youth Brigades. And they're screaming, leave our kids alone! It's like the right-wing blogosphere went home, dosed themselves with mescaline, and sat around watching History Channel reruns on mute while Pink Floyd's The Wall played in the background. And now, conservatives are encouraging parents to keep their kids home from school that day. From Newsmax.com.
The fascist in chief is taking his special brand of brainwashing to the classroom. Keep your kids home. I think this man is a threat to our basic unalienable rights. I don't want him indoctrinating my children. Seriously.
Seriously. And the kicker? Here's the kicker. Watching President Obama's speech will be totally optional. You know, like so many other aspects of totalitarian regimes, right? You have your choice. Get in line or we'll shoot you, or we won't. It's your choice. These bastards are crazy. And as Jason concludes, anyway, that's the state of the world today. If President Obama reminded people tomorrow to brush between meals, thousands of people would allow their teeth to rot right out of their heads because, oh my God, that's socialism! The upside to all of this is that after Tuesday, every teacher in the world will know precisely what students are going to need remedial help. The children of Republicans, they're doomed. Oh, my God, this is madness. Roz in Canada writes, Mike, most of the garbage these people say are only assumptions. But, of course, the gullible amongst you all will take it for the gospel truth. People don't think anymore. There is so much hate aimed at Obama now that you can feel it building to a crescendo. And if you don't, and you don't need me to tell you what that might be. And that would be too terrible to contemplate. As you say, nobody is making a move to stop this crazy paranoia, so maybe the end is inevitable. I hope I'm wrong, Roz. In the Dallas-Fort Worth area, from the Dallas-Fort Worth Star-Telegram, a planned live address to school students by President Barack Obama next week is causing controversy for school districts as some parents object to what they see as partisan politics. The issue, which became a hot-button topic on some radio talk shows this week, left school administrators scrambling to decide whether to allow students to watch the live broadcast scheduled for 11 a.m. Tuesday. Some administrators say they're reluctant to interrupt daily lesson plans and won't allow the address live, opting instead to provide an online link to the speech. Others will allow campuses to access the speech during the broadcast, but will also record it for teachers to show later. Those opposing the speech say students should not be forced to listen to a presidential message. Stephanie Click, Tarrant County Republican Party chairwoman, said, quote,
we're hearing from parents and grandparents that are not very happy. People don't like this. I've heard from some families that are planning to keep their kids home. End quote.
Parent Steve Atwell said he believes the speech is an attempt at propaganda. He urged school trustees in a letter to cancel plans to show the speech to give equal time to, quote, someone of an opposite moral and political viewpoint. End quote. Atwell wrote, many of my neighbors and friends believe that current policy may be pro-leftist. End quote.
Oh, my God. Tarrant County Democratic Party Chairman Steve Maxwell defended the president's attempt to underscore the need for American children to succeed in school. Maxwell said, quote, I have tremendous disappointment that any parent would not let their children listen to a pro-education message, a message about how important it is to stay in school and get that degree, end quote. I swear to God, this is madness. 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 It's madness. It's insanity. The Department of Education has put out a menu of classroom activities regarding President Obama's address to students across America. Before the speech, teachers can build background knowledge about the President of the United States by reading books about presidents. Teachers could motivate students by asking the following questions. Who's the president? What do you think it takes to be president? To whom do you think the president is going to be speaking? What do you think he wants? Why do you think he wants to speak to you? What do you think he will say to you? Teachers can ask students to imagine that they are delivering a speech to all of the students in the United States. For example, if you were the president, what would you tell students? What can students do to help in our schools? Teachers can chart ideas about what students would say. And third, before the speech, why is it important that we listen to the president and other elected officials like the mayor, senators, members of Congress, or the governor? Why is what they say important? Because they're murderous goddamn communists. That's why, kiddies. During the speech, as the president speaks, teachers can ask students to write down key ideas or phrases that are important or personally meaningful. Younger children could draw pictures and write as they're able to. As students listen to the speech, they could think about the following. What is the president trying to tell me? What is the president asking me to do? What new ideas and actions is the president challenging me to think about? Communism. Second, during the speech, students could record important parts of the speech where the president is asking them to do something. Students might think about the following. What specific job is he asking me to do? Is he asking anything of anyone else? Teachers, principals, parents, the American people? And third, students could record questions they have while he is speaking and then discuss them after the speech. Younger children may need to dictate their questions. Oh, my God. After the speech. One, teachers could ask students to share the ideas they recorded, exchange sticky notes or place notes on a butcher paper, poster in the classroom to discuss main ideas from the speech, such as citizenship, personal responsibility, civic duty. Oh, my God. Students could discuss their responses to the following questions. What do you think the president wants us to do? Does the speech make you want to do anything? Are we able to do what President Obama is asking of us? What would you like to tell the president? Oh, my God. And then their extension of the speech, there's some ideas. Create posters. Posters could be formatted like puzzle pieces or marked with the following labels. Personal, academic, community, and country goals. Each area could be labeled with three steps for achieving goals. Write letters about how they can achieve their short-term and long-term education goals. Write goals on colored index cards or pre-cut designs to post around the classroom. Interview one another and share goals with the class to create a supportive community. Write about their goals in a variety of genres such as poems, songs, and personal essays. Create artistic projects based on the themes of their goals. Graph individual progress toward goals. Oh, my God. We're doomed. Jesus Christ, will somebody help us? Obviously, Jesus has turned his back on us because the country is chock-a-block with queers and pro-abortion physicians. We're doomed. We're doomed. And now the Antichrist, Barack Hussein Obama, wants to indoctrinate our children in communism. Oh, Christ. Oh, Christ. What are we going to do?
Hey, truth seekers, here's the truth speaker, Mike Malloy.
Well, more or less. 10 before the hour, George in Alhambra, California, about this writes, it's frightening to think of, but it's probably true that these school administrators and parents who are against Obama addressing school-aged children would be perfectly fine with having the kids all gather around to watch someone like Pastor Hagee spew out another hate speech. How many parents make it mandatory for their kids to watch Glenn Beck? During the Bush presidency, I came to grips with the fact that there is a huge sector of the American population that is flat out stupid. I now realize that the problem is much worse than I suspected. Look at what's going on in this country. How do you cure stupidity? There can be no real progress with this many dumb people in the way. Mike from Connecticut writes, Mike, obviously the brainless morons who spew this ridiculous hate-filled crap will always be there. Why the hell are they actually affecting the actions of the Obama administration? For example, the artificial outrage of the town hall meetings has made the Democrats actually ponder trading away the public option from the potential bill. Why are they even listening and caving into these illogical pressures? Are they now going to compromise Obama's address to the school children? When is he going to ignore these fools? Mike in Connecticut, I think he is considering that in ignoring them, the assaults will be verbal assaults by the Becks and Malkins and the crazy people in the society, the people that hate America and trying to destroy it, that those attacks will be stepped up and eventually somebody's going to try to kill Barack Obama. I think that is on his mind. And he, I don't know. I just wonder what he thinks when he hears about this stuff. Jamie in Maryland writes, Mike, for the last 8+ years, I, like you and millions of others, wrote and called our congressional representatives too many times to count. We marched in the streets in overwhelming numbers, blogged, wrote letters to the paper and other media. We canvassed for progressive candidates and, yes, even not so progressive Democrats, and voted year in and year out to try to force the sea change. The more we shouted, the more we were drowned out and attacked for trying to save this country from falling completely into the abyss created by the anti-American criminal conservatives and corporatists. Our one notable moment of hope, the election of Barack Obama, is being betrayed, and in part by the Obama administration. You know the issues. In the last 2 to 3 months in particular, I felt that moment slip away as I see the latest vitriolic rhetoric and crazed lunatics from the far right taking over despite our constant pushback. Keith Olbermann focused the first half of his show tonight on Obama's apparent backing down from the last remaining shred of health care reform. Yes, it's madness. And maybe all smoke and mirrors. Sometimes I feel like such a fool. I know we can't give up, but what to do? What to do? Jamie in Maryland. How bad is it? Senator James, a senior U.S. Senator, James Inhofe from Oklahoma. He says Obama's policies have, quote, stripped America of whatever it has, end quote. According to Press TV, a senior U.S. senator has predicted a doomsday scenario for America under the leadership of President Barack Obama unless his powers are curbed. Senior Oklahoma Senator Jim Inhofe has slammed the current U.S. administration under Obama and called for a reversal of the president's socialist government policies that have, quote, stripped America of whatever it has, end quote. Speaking amongst a gathering of Republican Party supporters on Wednesday, that's yesterday, the anti-Obama vocal lawmaker said that unless the opposition minority reclaims authority in Washington's corridors of power within 16 months, the country would suffer from irredeemable consequences. At a town hall meeting at the Grove Community Center in Oklahoma, Inhofe said, quote, I never dreamed I would see an administration try to disavow all the things that have made this country different from all others, end quote. He went on to say, quote, I've never seen so many things happening at one time, so disheartening to America. Every institution that has made this country the greatest nation in the world is under attack, end quote. He also blasted the White House bid to set Guantanamo Bay, quote, terrorists, end quote, free on American soil, saying, I don't know why, quote, I don't know why President Obama is obsessed with turning terrorists loose in America, end quote. Listen to this. This is what these goddamn son of a bitches do. This is what they do. Every single word, I've been saying this for months, and you knew it long before you ever heard it from me, every single word out of their mouths is a lie. Only it's gone beyond that now. They are inciting people. And there are those out there who are easily incitable, who are going to blow up the Murrah Federal Building, who are going to commit an act of violence. Only there is no longer a Murrah Federal Building. It's already been blown up. Inhofe and Beck and Malkin are trying to inspire somebody to murder the president of the United States. This is what they are trying to do. This is what the pig man does every single day. This is what Hannity does every single day. This is what every one of these right-wing sons of bitches do. O'Reilly. O'Reilly inspired a man to murder a doctor. O'Reilly and the rest of them are working in concert. Tony Perkins, all of them, to find someone who is crazed enough that they can push over the edge, who will attempt or succeed in assassinating Barack Obama. This is what they are trying to do, and they're pushing it every single day. Inhofe wants to see Obama dead. When he makes comments like Obama is stripping America of whatever it has, Obama is turning the country socialist, Obama is turning terrorists loose in America, son of a bitch! And then he said Barack Obama is disarming America. They're trying to set someone up to kill the president of the United States. Why are they allowed to continue? Why? Why? This is not freedom of speech. This is murderous insurrection. This is insanity. This is treason. Why are they being allowed to continue to speak? They're trying to push someone to kill the president. Beck does it every goddamn day. Every day, Beck is pushing somebody to pick up a rifle and make the attempt. Seven past the hour, this is the Molloy Program. This first hour, we've been talking about the madness out there. Again, so many times I've said, you're not going to believe this. It just gets worse and worse. The Michelle Malkins and Glenn Becks, I don't mean to raise her to any level other than the fact that she's a crazy-eyed psychopath just like the rest of them. But Beck and Limbaugh and Hannity and the Family Research Council, Tony Perkins, all these right-wingers, every one of them, the senators, the representatives, who are just hell-bent on destroying the country, utterly and absolutely ending this republic and replacing it with a theocratic form of government that is handled and managed by nothing but totalitarian freaks. It's happening right before our eyes. And until the day comes when 30 or 40 million Americans take to the streets and say, enough, goddammit, enough, it's going to continue. This hasn't even been incremental. It's not the boiling frog syndrome at all. This is right in your face. And we on the progressive side are not responding. We're not showing up with guns. We are not hitting the streets by the millions. We are not demanding that these crazy son of a bitches sit down and shut up. And then backing it up with a couple of punches right in the nose if they don't. I'm sorry, but that's, you know, what are we going to do? Sit here and let it happen, right? What are we going to do? Got an email here from Benoit, who writes, I was ruined by presidential messages in school. Over 50 years ago, I was indoctrinated by presidential addresses while sitting in North Carolina schoolrooms. It wasn't bad enough that there were portraits of Washington and Jefferson looking down on us every day from the wall over the blackboard. The fascist authorities forced us to memorize Lincoln's Gettysburg Address, to read Washington's Farewell Address, and to listen to Franklin D. Roosevelt's Nothing to Fear But Fear Itself Address. I've never been the same since. Yeah, I had the same experience, Benoit, in Ohio. Kate in the desert, who is doing some hospice work. Well, she attempts to listen to this program now. You remember Kate, the one who left her desert home and went down to the Mississippi Gulf Coast to try to help, and did help, and spent months down there. Now she's doing hospice work. She writes, as I set the dinner tray down for my patient, she makes several snarky responses about the president speaking to kids as, quote, by God, they couldn't make me force my kids, end quote. I chose not to explore education with her, nor the fact that Fox News was putting out slanted BS. It's not worth explaining anything to her. At 84, she can think what she pleases. She's a Republican who won't be moved. President, visit my fifth grade class. Nah, I'd rather have had Whitey Ford or Mickey Mantle. Ike had already kissed my head when he was still wearing stars. It was a parade in D.C. before the war was over. My mom was in the front of the crowd, my 15-second claim to fame. I was an arrogant little snot way back then, bragged because I could spell his name and knew where he was born, Eisenhower. But what you're talking about is so scary I can't even talk about it. I can't even talk about it. Actually, I have no audience. By the way, after watching them for the 25th time last evening, Rick didn't get on the plane with Elsa. I keep waiting. Kate. Here's looking at you, kid. No, he never does get on the plane, does he? This is from Amy, who listens on KPOJ in Portland. Mike, are you talking about health care tonight? She sent this earlier today. Today I received an email asking me to contact my senators and representatives to pass S-688 and H-R-1691. It seems that insurance companies are trying to make mastectomy surgeries an outpatient procedure. Mastectomies. And the patient's doctors would like them to stay in the hospital at least 2 days instead of being sent home a few hours after surgery, against the wishes of their surgeon, still groggy from anesthesia and sometimes with drainage tubes still attached. Oh, and without at least one of their breasts and assorted lymph nodes. I believe the bill is called the Breast Cancer Patient Protection Act. We need our legislature to enact a law demanding that insurance companies allow doctors to decide what is best for their patients. What country are we in? Why are we even having a debate? We should have national health care, single payer, period. Snopes has the history of attempts to pass this bill. They've been trying to pass this since 1997. Insurance companies. You see how these right-wing vermin have totally inverted the truth. I mean, this is not a newsflash. The insurance companies want to decide a mastectomy patient's rate of and place of recovery, you see? And people like Inhofe and the crazy-eyed Michelle Malkin and the rest of these sons of bitches are spending every moment trying to convince you that it is the government that wants to do that. Who in Christ's name is listening to the truth? Maybe my view is totally skewered, but I keep watching the numbers fall, the numbers that say, yes, we want Obama's ideas of health insurance reform to pass. I keep watching those numbers fall, and I think to myself, son of a bitch, I'm sitting in a toilet bowl. I must be. This kind of stuff should be flushed, but look what's going on. How could we be this stupid? Michael in New York called in last night, said, thanks for taking my call last night. I don't think I expressed myself well, probably because I'm freaking out about life in America in a way I haven't freaked out since the 2000 so-called election when the Supreme Court installed Bush as president. I think I was trying to condense a number of thoughts into a short formulation which was that people are brainwashed above all. Some are truly stupid and some extremely stupid people who have been very vocal on health care reform. However, unfortunately, some otherwise intelligent people have been so brainwashed that they're incapable of thinking that a government health care plan could actually be good for people. Finding so many people who are convinced, in effect, that the earth is flat is stunning. I remember the healthcare debate in the 90s under Clinton, and I never really supported Clinton's plan because I was for single payer. Clinton wanted a system essentially based on managed care, in effect HMOs, just with mandates. The debate was stupid enough back then, but it's 100 times more stupid now. And ultimately, it's an issue of corruption. The American political system is utterly corrupt. Congress is bought and paid for, and the influence of the largest companies is growing by the day. On top of all that, the American people are enslaved to their jobs, working more hours than virtually anyone else in the Western world, so that they barely have the time or energy to become as informed as they should be on the issues that concern them most. A diarist at Daily Kos announced that he or she, I'm not sure, was leaving the United States and said in parting that the American people were just too ignorant, too easily duped, and actually dangerous. The diarist received a fair amount of condemnation for not insisting on staying in the U.S. and fighting to make it better. While it is better to fight to improve the country, I can actually sympathize with the diarist since I have been so disgusted at various times that I would have happily just relocated to another more reasonable country if it were all that easy. I think we have never been in such a state in my lifetime. I realize Bush is out of power and we have Obama now, but it seems as though there is a residual effect from every rotten Republican president we've had over nearly the past 30 years. Hell, many of us are still in the thrall of Reagan's no government is good government ideology, for that matter. Anyway, I apologize if I sounded a bit strident or a bit on the edge. I'm definitely freaked out by what's going on. But I probably don't need a shrink. For now, best, Michael in New York. You know, I've said many times that I had my chances to join the military when I was younger and never did, for a number of clearly obvious reasons. But I've also said that were my country attacked by an outside force, I'd be the first one to pick up a weapon and kill as many of the invader as I possibly could. That's why I relate to the Iraqi people or the Viet Cong or the freedom fighters in Hungary in 1958. So nobody's invading my country. They're already here. The sons of bitches are already here. The hour. This is the Molloy Show. After this next break, we're going to open up the lines if you like to call in. Dave writes, he saw this at today's Huffington Post. I don't know who the writer is. I guess it doesn't matter. But it talks about how Republicans in Congress have raised this boogie bear of a bloated, socialized, bureaucrat-run nightmare of a healthcare system as a means of undermining Obama's efforts at a systematic overhaul. The writer says, and yet, as Democratic sources are now pointing out, when medical crisis hits close to home, many of these same officials turn to a government-run hospital for their own intensive care and difficult surgeries. Take, for instance, Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, Republican of Kentucky, who warns that, quote, a government takeover of health care would, quote, take away the care that people already have and are perfectly satisfied with, end quote. In its place, the senator said, would be, quote, a system in which care and treatment will be either delayed or denied, end quote. He said that in July 2009. In February 2003, McConnell actually went to one of those government-run institutions for a procedure of his own. The Kentucky Republican traveled to the National Naval Medical Center in Bethesda, Maryland, to have an elective coronary artery bypass surgery after it had been revealed that he had arterial blockages. Also known as Bethesda Naval Hospital, the National Naval Medical Center is the premier branch of the U.S. Navy system of medical centers, as in the government runs it. It's also a place where elected officials of all ideological stripes and political branches often go to get surgery performed. Indeed, members of Congress pay an annual fee for the privilege of getting treatment at Bethesda Naval Hospital, or for that matter, Walter Reed Army Medical Center. It is, as longtime Democrat Martin Frost wrote for Political, quote, like belonging to an HMO, end quote. Only in this case is the surgery is conducted at a public facility. None of this has stopped some of these same officials who have been taken advantage, who have taken advantage of this congressional perk, from railing against the intrusiveness and inefficiencies of a healthcare system with greater government involvement. Senator John McCain, for instance, recently applauded the town hall protesters who were, in his words, revolting, quote, against a government-run health system, end quote. That was August 2009. In May of 2000, McCain had surgery at Bethesda Naval Hospital to remove a potentially lethal melanoma from his left temple. Senator Kit Bond, Republican of Missouri, meanwhile, has warned of the rationing of care, expensive costs, and reduced quality that come under a government-run health care plan. In April 2003, however, he traveled to Bethesda Naval Hospital to undergo hip replacement surgery in an attempt to alleviate degenerative arthritis in his left hip. Senator George Voinovich, Republican of Ohio, has declared that a bureaucratic Washington government plan is not the answer to the nation's health care needs. In June 2003, the Ohio Republican went to Bethesda Naval Hospital to have a pacemaker installed. The best example of this double standard, however, may be Representative Roy Blunt, Republican of Missouri, who compared government-run health care to an elephant stomping up and killing off the mice of the private insurance industry. Blunt has had two procedures done at Bethesda. The first came in July 2002 when he underwent surgery to move his left kidney. The second came a year later when he underwent prostate surgery after being diagnosed with early-stage prostate cancer. To be strictly accurate, there's an important distinction between a government-run hospital and a government-run health insurance agency. The public plan, which is the focus of much of the Republicans' ire, is the latter. Bethesda is the former. Conservatives have long used the notion of socialized medicine to defeat health care reform efforts, even though when it comes to the flagship naval hospital just miles away, the worries about bureaucratic nightmares, low-quality care, and long lines seem to be wiped away. I hate these people. I hate these people with a passion that is so deep and so abiding that I will take it with me into the dirt or the crematorium. I'm not sure. I haven't decided yet. Kit Bond and McCain and Voinovich and McConnell. The dirty son of a bitches. The tricksterism that they use on people. Oh, you don't want government health care. I do. It's awful. You have to wait. The care is no good. It's horrible. And yet as soon as they need something, where do they go? All right. We're just about ready for a break. I've got a lot more stuff here, as always, but we're going to open the lines. The number here is 877-996-2556, 877-996-2556. If you'd like to talk about this topic, give us a call.
To know. It's only one more drink. I wish you would. backwards, forwards, and all.
Loud, proud, progressive talk. It's Mike Malloy.
Ain't no doubt about it, baby. It's you, I am the beast. I'm wrestling with a rat and a grizzly bear. It's my life, baby, but I don't care. That tough enough.
It's about 25 before the hour. John is in North Hollywood, California, listening on KTLK. Welcome to the program, John.
Well, hi, Mike.
Hi.
I wanted to share with you something I heard today. It was said by a well-respected progressive talk show personality, radio personality, and that person stated that anybody who badmouths, talks badly about Glenn Beck, only, I think that was the word, only serves to give him publicity, improve his career, make him more money.
No, I completely disagree. 57 advertisers have left the program. There is no way for the two or three truly liberal talk show hosts left in this country can do anything to enhance Glenn Beck's audience or make it bigger. There's, you know, we could the three or four of us remaining could go on the air every day and just say Glenn Beck for the whole 3 hours we're on. It wouldn't matter one way or the other. So whoever said that, I just completely disagree, although, you know, they're entitled to their opinion.
May I make a comment?
Sure.
When somebody suggests that we, truth seekers, ignore some part of what we're looking for, some part of information,
right,
ignore it and just disregard it for that, you know, sort of a reactionary reason.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a disservice to the information that is required to reach the truth.
Sure.
And my respect for that person went down a couple notches.
Mm-hmm.
when that was suggested to just ignore it and, you know, hope it goes away.
Yeah, that's like ignoring a lump in your breast or on your penis or, and just saying, well, maybe it'll go away.
Or a lump in your country.
A lump in your country. That's, an awful lot of Germans in Italy. A lot of Germans in Germany in the 20s and early 30s tried to ignore the fascism that was arising in their country, and we know the results. So,
and it's that kind of wolf in sheep's clothing that I am on the look. I always look for.
Yeah.
And for anybody who thinks that I'm just trying to cause problems within my side, I believe I am more of a lefty, if you will.
Yeah, no, I think you should call out any so-called progressive or liberal talk show hosts. You should call them out if they say just ignore this. That's insane.
It's a cute way, you know, you get people on your side thinking, oh yeah, you're part of us. You're saying the right stuff. And then they throw a little subliminal zinger in.
Yeah.
Like that. Man, that just pops me. But,
yeah, is this talk show host
I'm not saying man or woman or anything.
Well, are the initials Ed Schultz?
I will not respond.
That's okay.
But whoever heard it, like me,
right,
knows it.
Yeah.
Okay, and be aware of it.
Even you, sir,
I'm listening to, I'm watching you.
Good.
I haven't tuned into you for many years. I've only tuned into you for a couple months.
Good. Well, if you hear compromise on my part, John, I hope you'll be the first to either call me or email, because I don't believe in compromise. I used to have a model, no apologies, no explanations. And that was based on being clear enough. Well, first of all, being honest enough so that you don't have to apologize for the truth, and being clear enough so an explanation isn't necessary. I still believe, and John, thank you. Thanks for checking in, man. I still believe that if I say things that need to be explained, then I need to check what I'm saying and make it more clear. I always assume that when I'm talking on this program, I'm talking to people like me who are concerned, who have a modicum of education. You don't have to be college educated. I'm not. Well, I'm not degreed. I am college educated, but not degreed. You don't have to be, have an IQ of 130 at all. I've always considered myself to be about 80% as common as possible. The other 10% sub-common, the other 10%, the remaining 10% maybe above common. But the vast majority of my thought processes are right strictly just common, everyday sense, nonsense, logic, illogic, right thinking, wrong thinking, that sort of thing. And any talk show host on the liberal side that says ignore it is either a goddamn fool or John said, a wolf in sheep's clothing, which I tend to believe about Schultz anyway, always have. But anyway, that's just my opinion. Well, maybe it was Randy Rhodes. I don't know. I don't think it would be Randy, though. Couple of emails, then back to your calls here. This is from Dr. Sachs, who is a musician indeed. He writes, well, I was already down today, and I started to email you. I have nothing pertinent to say, really. Hatred has more energy and has fuel that adds to the fire every day, and there's a lot of it going on right now. And most amusingly, some of these folks on Facebook with long discussions ask, why can't we bring up political discussions about Obama without it being racist? Sigh. Like Nina Simone said a long time ago, it's racism. I just wrote this on Facebook in a long thread, but I don't know why I try anymore. Bro, I'm growing tired of all this ignorance here. It is wearing my ass out today. Here's the post. If we are all watching all political points of view, why does the Secret Service say death threats against Mr. Obama are up 400% and they've never seen anything like it? Why is Glenn Beck fueling the fire saying that Obama is racist? Why is Senator Inhofe saying that Obama is destroying everything good about America and hopes America can hang? You see, we live in a racist country and some people are fueling the fire, and by these words are provoking the crazy person who will go out and try to assassinate the president. If we in America do not deal with the hatred that is bubbling and realize what it is about, it will destroy us all. If some people think there's nothing racist going on, with the radio shows, the comments, the guns at rallies, shame on you. People got arrested at Bush rallies for wearing Move On t-shirts. I'm extremely disturbed about this. And then he refers his readers to a YouTube video, Tim Wise. I'll look it up. Thanks, Dr. Sachs. This is from Etta and Pat, who are listening to Sirius. Mike, I'm exasperated. From what I'm hearing today, I guess my public socialist education was worthless. I was taught that civic responsibility was a good thing. Helping people was a good thing. Striving to achieve was a good thing. To be inspired by the president would have thrilled me. Where have we gone? The children have no political view. The children have no slanted thoughts. Why do we let the bigoted, small-minded adults taint our children? This reminds me of a story, a young lad walking along the top of a fence and never fell until some adult told him about gravity. Interesting thought. I cannot find the words to express the sigh you make, so please insert here. Your friends, Etta and Pat. From Shirley. Mike, just a quick note to say how much I appreciate your show, even though it often makes me sick when I hear your in-depth accounts of what the right wing continues to do. I listen to and read other sources every day, but your show opens a whole new avenue of information because of your research and the knowledge you've gained over the years, blah, blah, blah. And because you have the courage to tell it exactly like it is without mincing words or squelching emotion. By that, I think she means I cuss a lot. In my lifetime, Shirley writes, I have not seen anything to compare with what is happening in America today, and in my heart, I feel it will get worse, much worse. These people are vicious, ignorant, and stupid, and very, very dangerous. The fear in my gut that literally makes me sick to my stomach is these are the people with the guns and the ammunition. In fact, the LA Times said this week that police departments across the country are worried that they cannot get the ammo they need. Supplies are limited. Some sources are already sold out. It is obvious where this is going. When will the American people wake up? How do we facilitate that awakening? I feel that you and those like you are preaching to the choir. The radical right, mostly phony Christians, refuse to read, see, or hear anything that doesn't come from Fox News. And I mean that. I mean anything. What can we do? There's no opportunity to engage in meaningful dialogue or an intelligent conversation. It is hopeless. I feel helpless and often in despair. When will this insanity end? Shirley.
Dissent, it's not America. Here's Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. Dave is in Huntington Beach, California, listening on KTLK. KTLA, or something. KTLK, hi Dave.
Hi Mike, how's it going?
It's going. I guess I'm getting a little bit blurry-eyed. Hi.
I don't know how interesting this is, but I think you have something with this Glenn Beck suicide phenomenon because my neighbor started watching him, and now he feels like he wants to commit suicide.
Your neighbor does?
Yeah, he's a real Republican right-winger, and ever since Obama got elected, with the negativity that Glenn Beck has been attaching to Obama,
yeah,
he believes every word of it.
Wow.
So I think, like, in the 80s, when the Congress made rock and roll have the suicide, on the album, Glenn Beck's show should have that as well.
Oh, you mean the warnings, the warning labels?
Yeah, the warning that a suicidal man is going to make you commit suicide as well. So I just wanted to compliment you on your, that was a very prescient, idea that you had about him and suicide, because I think he's making people who listen to him and believe him feel the same way.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it's just too weird for words, Dave. I spent the better part of a year and a half working a crisis intervention hotline in the Baltimore, York, Pennsylvania area, where family violence is just rampant. It's like Mississippi, for God's sake. And after a extensive period of training, I was put on a phone to answer these crisis calls, people calling in ready to kill themselves or commit murder. Most of it was family violence, most of it directed against women, some of it directed against children. I had a number of 12 and 13 and 14-year-olds call in ready to kill themselves. And so having I say that because having had the training and knowing what kind of language can be that an observer can key into and say, okay, this person is definitely considering suicide. And then when you take a look at some of the craziness that Beck has been putting out there, I don't disagree that people who listen to him might feel come to the point where they want to kill themselves. You know, how many people committed suicide in this country after the Jim Jones massacre down in Guyana? Anytime you have someone who is out there talking about this kind of craziness, you're going to have people who will follow them no matter what, right over the edge. But being aware of, I'm certainly not an expert. I don't have a degree in this sort of thing. But having gone through training and being qualified to work, at least somebody thought I was qualified to work a crisis intervention hotline that included, like I said, family violence, suicide, so on and so forth. We were taught to listen for keywords and phrases and how they're put together and the emotion behind them, the person's breathing patterns. Just there's all kinds of cues. So when I said that the other, I don't know, several weeks ago, and I think a lot of my listeners got the impression I was trying to be cute or you know, make a joke or something. So much depends on how you deliver a statement like that or whatever it was however I presented that. But I meant it. I honestly, deeply, completely believe that Glenn Beck is a potential suicide. Now, I followed that up with a snarky comment about if he does it, I hope he does it on his television show. Yeah, that was snarky. That was right down on his level in the swill and the garbage. And I don't regret saying it. Not at all. But the other part of the statement, I honestly believe that now when you couple his language, and if you watch him on television, which I've been inclined to do lately, which would back up, somebody told me it was Tom Hartman who made the statement, would back up Hartman's statement that if you give this guy too much attention, you know, he starts to enhance his craziness and people start to look. But in watching him lately, watching the body language, watching his facial expressions, some of the stuff you can't fake. I mean, you can pretend crazy only so far. And then you can't pretend it anymore. I mean, sure, we can all gibber and drool and act like we're crazy. A lot of people do it in order to avoid justice in a courtroom, right? But there are certain characteristics and body language displays that are not phony. They're legit. You couple all that with the fact that Beck has in his family two or three family members who have committed suicide. There is some, I believe, some psychologists or psychiatrists believe there's a genetic component to a lot of this stuff, including suicide. And if that's the case, then it puts Beck even closer to the edge. So the comment I made was incredibly snarky, and I stand by it. I'll say it again. If he does it, I hope he does it on television so that his followers can see what madness really looks like in real time by a complete psychopath who is hell-bent on destruction, his own and this country. So aside from the snarkiness, though, which, again, I thoroughly stand by, I would never retract or retreat from that statement, never. There is the reality that Glenn Beck is a potential suicide. Thanks for checking in. Who was that? Well, anyway, thanks for checking in. We'll be back after the break. Stick around if you can. welcome back. It's about 6 and a half past the hour. This is the Molloy program. You know what we're talking about this evening? Let's go right back to the phones here for a while. Dave is in St. Louis, Missouri. Hey, Dave.
Hey, Mike. How's it going? I just want to first start out by saying I love your show.
Thanks.
My stepdad lives in Southern California, and I live in St. Louis, and we talk about you. You brought us both closer together.
I'll be darned. Well, thank you.
I appreciate it. I served in the military. I was in the Army. And I've given to this country, and I don't feel like we're getting anything back. The middle class, you know, we work the hardest and we get the least out of it. You know, I'm tired of it, really. I'm fed up. And come Wednesday, if Obama doesn't say what I want to hear, then my stepdad both said we're not going to vote for him again in the upcoming election in 2012. And frankly, I'm at the point right now that I'm ready to leave. I'm ready to go somewhere where they actually care about their middle class. You know, like I said, I served this country and I did it honorably. And, you know, when we got no health care for the middle class, you know, or not the, like other countries and, you know, our schooling, I've got two children. I've got a 13-year-old and a 4-year-old. And I think about their future in this country. I'm wondering, you know, what do they have to really live for here? You know, they have better opportunities somewhere else.
Well, let me respond, if I may, Dave. I share a lot of what you're thinking. I've got a 5-year-old. In addition to grown kids and grandkids, I have a 5-year-old, and I worry about her exactly along the lines of what you're saying, as I worry about my grandchildren. As far as Obama's concerned, when you say, if he doesn't soon say what you want to hear, you're not going to vote for him again. So much, I understand that. But, matter of fact, I feel betrayed by some of the things that I thought I was voting for in Obama that he could have handled with executive order that he hasn't handled. However, let's be real clear on one thing. And that is, it's not up to Obama to pass laws that benefit the American people. It's not up to Obama to make sure that the middle class can make a comeback. I was brought up, you know, like, oh, here we go. Here's Molloy's story. But it's true. I was brought up very poor. I know what it's like to be on what we used to call relief before welfare, as a lot of my listeners have. And whatever happened beyond that, you know, by writing or doing radio or working in television, whatever, I managed to get myself into the middle class. Never any higher. And we'll never go any higher for a number of reasons. I don't have that kind of ambition. A, B, I'm not in the fields that that present that as an option. I'm in liberal talk radio, and with very few exceptions, people don't make a lot of money in liberal talk radio, and I'm not one of the exceptions. Trust me. But I'm fully aware that it's up to Congress. The Congress has to pass the laws, the oversight. Now the president can veto. The president can advocate. Remember that old saw, the president proposes, Congress disposes. Obama can come up with ideas for health care. He can come up with ideas for economic stimulus, yada, 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 yada. But it's up to Congress. Obama can decide a country to invade. It's up to Congress to declare war. Oops, I guess that isn't used anymore, is it? My bad. Even though the Constitution says Congress has the power to declare war. But ever since the War Powers Act, we have given our presidents the right to put soldiers in harm's way. And then, you know, God forbid that Congress would say we're not going to fund it anymore, because then the crazy people in this country say, oh, you're abandoning the soldiers. And they shouldn't have been there to begin with. So it's a difficult thing, I think, for me. I'm not saying for you, Dave. It's difficult for me to keep reminding myself that there's very little Obama can do. The people who set up this country were terrified of an executive like Dick Cheney, even though we just had eight years of one. And so they set up the checks and balances system. You know this. I'm not trying to sit here and get all, you know, luxury with you, because you know all this. It just sometimes I need to be reminded of it. Maybe you do too, that it's not up to Obama. Obama doesn't make law. Obama can propose. He can suggest things. He can get crazy with health insurance like the Clintons did. The Clintons tried to ram it down Congress's throat and Congress said no. Or you can do what Obama tried to do and get Congress to come up with the ideas. Of course, in the 15 years since Clinton was in power, whatever was left of a Congress that wasn't owned by corporate America has disappeared. Democrat or Republican, 90% of all the Republicans, about 80% of the Democrats are owned by corporate America. And of course, as we all know, the military establishment and the pharmaceutical, the military defense establishment or offense establishment and the pharmaceutical industry are the biggest contributors, the ones who send in the most money, the ones that have members of Congress on the shortest leash. As far as leaving the country, I understand. Oh, man, trust me. And listen, Dave, thank you. I appreciate what you had to say. As far as moving the hell out of here, I did not serve in the military. But I have served in other ways. I've tried to be a good citizen. I've tried to vote, just like one of the emails I read tonight. You know, you take to the streets, as the First Amendment says you can, to demonstrate and yell and hoot and holler. You talk to your neighbors. You talk to the PTA. You go to meetings. We talk among ourselves. Or you do talk radio. It doesn't make any difference. You try to do your bit to make this country what the framers had in mind. And yeah. I don't want anyone to get in that argument about the country. You know, they were all racist and committers of genocide. Okay. But I think what they were trying to do is establish a framework that would live far beyond their lifetimes, their what they were dealing with. How many of these people said, you know, we're handing you a republic, keep it if you can. So we've lost it. I think that is a given. Can we get it back? I don't know anymore. But I understand perfectly what you're saying. We, the American people, have lost the Democratic Republic that that was intended by the framers for this nation to become. And a few people along the way, whether it was Lincoln or Roosevelt or Eisenhower, Truman. And don't tell me about Truman dropping the atom bomb. I understand. But the ideas were there, and it's the ideas that count, not the people. Yeah, hooray for charismatic leaders. You betcha. But it's the ideas. It's the charismatic leaders who can take the ideas and say, okay, look, let's try to make this happen. Here, Congress, you do this. Here, executive branch, you try to do this. Here, judicial branch, you try to make sure that what we're doing is not in violation of the Constitution. You know, what did Roosevelt call it? The bully pulpit. Use the bully pulpit. Was it Roosevelt? I don't even know anymore. It really doesn't matter anymore. But to use the bully pulpit, which is what Obama's trying to do. Jesus Christ, every time I hear him give one of his speeches, I think to myself, and this is a guy that the right wing is trying to paint as what? A socialist? A totalitarian? Somebody wants to kill America? God damn it, what he's trying to do is make people think. That's all. I don't like some of his inaction. I wish he would write off the Republican Party, this stuff about bipartisanship. That's garbage. It's never going to happen. There's not going to be one single Republican sign on to anything. Oh, they might get Olympia Snow and Susan Collins. They're not Republicans. Getting pissed off again. I'm not yelling at you. Caller from Missouri. I get as frustrated as you do. I understand what you're saying. I'm ready to leave too. I've had discussions with Kathy. But I just don't think I can. You know, to bug out, I just don't think I can. You're a soldier. I doubt if you're going to bug out. So in your way and in my way, you know, we put duty on our country. And but I hear what you're saying. I hear what you're saying. All right, let's take a break. We'll be back. When we come back, something Max Blumenthal has written. It's fairly quick, but I want to share it with you. Then we'll back to your phone call. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
The radio. Oh, listen to the radio. The radio. Oh, listen to the radio. Radio. Oh, oh. I left the handsome Tuesday at the good old boy in Tennessee. Now he's sitting on the sofa. He's looking for a supper, wondering what's become of me. Car. Hey, are you ever leaving?
truth seekers gather round the campfire. It's more Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Max Blumenthal writing about Eisenhower's other warning. Max writes, in the summer of town hall disruptions and birth certificate controversies, a summer when it seemed as if the Republican Party had been captured by its extremist wing, it's worth recalling a now obscure letter from President Dwight Eisenhower. Although Eisenhower is commonly remembered for a farewell address that raised concerns about the military-industrial complex, his letter offers an equally important and relevant warning to beware the danger posed by those seeking freedom from the mental stress and burden, his words, of democracy. The story began in 1958 when Eisenhower received a letter from Robert Biggs, a terminally ill World War II vet. Biggs told the president that he, quote, felt from your recent speeches the feeling of hedging and a little uncertainty. He added, quote, we wait for someone to speak for us and back him completely if the statement is made in truth, end quote. Eisenhower could have discarded Biggs's note or sent a canned response, but he didn't. He composed a thoughtful reply. After enduring Senator Joseph McCarthy of Wisconsin, who had smeared his old colleague General George C. Marshall as a communist sympathizer, and having guarded the Republican Party against the newly emergent radical right John Birch Society, which labeled him and much of his cabinet Soviet agents, the president perhaps welcomed the opportunity to expound on his vision of the open society. He said, quote, I doubt that citizens like yourself could ever, under our democratic system, be provided with the universal degree of certainty, the confidence in their understanding of our problems, and the clear guidance from higher authority that you believe needed. Such unity is not only logical, but indeed indispensable in a successful military organization, but in a democracy, debate is the breath of life, end quote. Eisenhower also recommended a short book, The True Believer, by Eric Hoffer, a self-educated itinerant longshoreman who earned the nickname the Stevedore Philosopher. Hoffer wrote, quote, faith in a holy cause is to a considerable extent a substitute for the lost faith in ourselves, end quote. Though Eisenhower was criticized for lacking an intellectual framework or even an interest in ideas, he was drawn to Hoffer's insights. He explained to Biggs that Hoffer, quote, points out that dictatorial systems make one contribution to their people which leads them to tend to support such systems, freedom from the necessity of informing themselves and making up their own minds concerning these tremendous, complex, and difficult questions, end quote. The authoritarian follower, Eisenhower suggested, desired nothing more than insulation from the pressures of a free society. Alluding to Senator McCarthy and his allies, Eisenhower pointed out that Cold War fears were distorted and exploited for political advantage. He said, quote, it is difficult indeed to maintain a reasoned and accurately informed understanding of our defense situation on the part of our citizenry when many prominent officials, possessing no standing or expertness as they themselves claim, attempt to further their own ideas or interests by resorting to statements more distinguished by stridency than by accuracy, end quote. It is worth noting, of course, that these Cold War exaggerations weren't just a Republican specialty. John F. Kennedy was making a supposed missile gap between the United States and the Soviet Union a key element of his presidential campaign. In closing his letter, Eisenhower praised Biggs for his, quote, fortitude in pondering these problems despite your deep personal adversity, end quote. Perhaps it was the president's sense of solidarity with a fellow soldier that prompted him to respond to Biggs with such care. And perhaps it was his experience as Supreme Allied Commander in Europe that taught him that the rise of extreme movements and authoritarianism could take root anywhere, even in a democracy. Max Blumenthal writing in today's New York Times. We've talked about Eric Hoffer's book, The True Believer, on this program many times. It's a book I read way back in the early 60s, late 50s, early 60s. And at the time, you know, a lot of people say, well, how could you be an atheist? You were brought up, you know, blah, 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 blah. It really opened doors and windows and blew the roof off of every organized political slash religious slash societal doctrine that had ever been crammed into my little head. In reading Eric Hoffer, The True Believer, there's some books you just recommend automatically. That is one I would recommend forever and ever. World Without End, amen. To anyone who wants to understand the insanity of so-called true believers. He was a longshoreman. I think he was Jewish. He was a laborer. He was extremely insightful. I don't know what his formal education was. He probably went to, I don't know, Caltech, UCLA, some probably a West Coast, because he lived on the West Coast. But his insights, and I mentioned his Jewishness because he was an American Jew. He wasn't a Holocaust survivor. He wasn't an immigrant. He was an American. I hope I got that right. I think I do. But his insights were incredibly on target back then. So here we are, 50 years after that book was published, maybe 55 years after that book was published. And what he wrote five decades ago is even more relevant today than it was then. So if you want some recommendation from me, get The True Believer by Eric Hoffer.
The voice inside your head. It's Mike Malloy.
No, that's Glenn Beck.
I was born like this. I had no choice.
It's 25 before the hour. Email here from Frank. Dear Mike, I enjoy your show. I listen to it at 7 o'clock Mountain Standard. I guess that's Mountain Standard Time on channel 167 XM. Tonight you read a letter from a woman in Warren, Ohio, concerning a waiver her child had received from the school that if complete and returned, the child would be excused from listening to the president's remarks coming up next week. In Utah, where I have lived my entire 64 years, the powers that be, namely the Republican Party and the predominant religious culture, have created a situation where entire school districts, by order of their respective school boards, are not even going to allow the president's address to be piped into their schools. To learn more, catch a line to the local CBS affiliate, KUTV, Channel 2 in Salt Lake City, Utah. P.S. America Left is the absolute best programming on XM radio. Frank. So, yeah, in entire school districts, I'm not surprised, in Texas and Utah, sure. What is surprising about that? But, I would assume that, in most southern states, that it's not going to be available. I don't know what they're going to do here. I have no idea. But think about it. The president of the United States going to talk to kids via video? I mean, is it just going to be on television? I'm not sure how it's going into the schools. I would assume that. Talk to them about personal responsibility, about taking your education seriously, about doing your homework, about the importance of education where it concerns your future. That's what he's going to talk about. On the other hand, it's very understandable where that would be an immense threat to the right-wing religious freaks and political freaks in this country. Get educated. Neither the corporatists nor the religious crazies want children educated. That's the last thing they want. They want children indoctrinated, and there's a difference. Education giggles and laughs and slaps its knees over the idea of creationism, for example. Indoctrination raises that to the same level of natural selection. You see how that works? And ultimately destroys natural selection because it is demonic. And in the destruction of natural selection, or theory of evolution, if you want to put it that way, you also eliminate what? Paleontology, archaeology, chemistry, biology, astrophysics, physics themselves. you see? And it's back to what the Pope said about Galileo. You know, recant or I'll cut your goddamn head off or burn you at the stake. Okay, we'll just house arrest you for a few decades until you do confess and admit your mistake. Okay, he said. My bad. Didn't mean it, Pope. This is what is happening now here in this country. So to listen to an authority figure like the President of the United States suggesting that children should focus on their education, take responsibility for their education, is heresy. Literally. By definition, it's heresy to these people. Education is a no-no. Indoctrination is an absolute requirement. That's where we are. That's where we are. You know it. I know it. So, for the President of the United States to have the gall, temerity, dedication to freeing your mind, that he would offer to address our elementary school children is nothing but an attempt to these right-wingers to take over their position. And their position is indoctrination. These people are sick. They're destroying our country. And the most vocal in their mob, people like Beck, for example, are inciting somebody to rise up out of this herd of ignorance and stupidity and murder the president. That's what they're hoping for. That's what they're pushing. They push those buttons every single day. People like Beck, Malkin, Limbaugh, Hannity, the rest of these people would have no greater pleasure or thrill or self-satisfaction than if the President of the United States were murdered. And you know what? O'Reilly, let's put him in there too. Every single one of these pig bastards would then take claim in the privacy of their conversations with other pig bastards. Hey, how's that, man? I pushed him. I did it. God damn it, I did it. With all my chalkboards and my this and my that, and my trips to the whorehouse out in Nevada and all my drug usage. I did it. I pushed him. I pushed that dumb bastard out there from pick a state to go ahead and off the president. Ha, ha, ha. God damn, boy, I'm powerful. In the meantime, we're not doing anything to stop these people. Well, colorofchange.org did. They got 57 advertisers. 57? Dear God, I wish I had that many. Don't you, Kathy? 57 advertisers to pull their spots. Of course, in a typical Rupert Murdoch, Fox, totalitarian-flavored channel statement, doesn't hurt them because the advertisers are just saying, we don't want it on Beck's program. They'll continue to advertise. And this is the part that makes the whole thing kind of phony. I mean, good for Color of Change. I'm not saying they're phony. They did a hell of a job. But the advertisers, all these righteous advertisers are saying, oh, well, we're not going to support that. Of course you are. Of course you're supporting it because you're continuing to advertise on Fox. So, you know, all you advertisers have pulled out, you know, don't expect true believers like me to believe anything you've done and give you credit Because if you were serious, if you were sincere, you'd pull your advertising off that whole goddamn nest of snakes. Murdoch doesn't care. Yeah, every advertiser who advertised on his program, on Beck's program, pull out. They don't care. They don't give a damn. They couldn't care less. Murdoch and Fox News board and you know, they couldn't care less. They're laughing about it. Hey, you go, Glenn. Ha ha! Goddamn! We still have the advertising. So, to the advertisers that I was praising a couple of weeks ago for having the nerve to or the dedication to truth, justice, and the American way to pull out of that pig's program, I've changed my mind. You're a bunch of lying, sneaky sons of bitches because you haven't pulled out completely. Now, to the ones who have pulled away from Fox News altogether, fine, good for you. But you continue to feed the monster. Beck is just a pimple on the monster's ass. He's the pimple that's about to burst and spew pus all over the studio. But he's just a pimple on the monster's ass. The monster is Fox News. So enough with the praise of these advertisers who've pulled off Beck. Who do you think you're kidding if you haven't pulled off of Fox News altogether? You understand what I'm saying? Sure you do. And the thing is, these companies, they understand. They know how the game is played. This is to satisfy both the knuckle draggers, because, hey, look, no, wait a minute. We're staying on Fox News. We just want to pull off the Beck show until the heat dies. Satisfy them, and to satisfy the progressives, the liberals, the Democrats, the normal Americans who are insisting, okay, we're not advertising on Beck anymore. Well, we quit. You see how that works? Come on. So don't think for a second that corporate America has seen the error of its ways in supporting fascism in media and decided to end their support of fascism. Because if you think that, you are a goddamn fool. Don't be a fool. You're not a fool. You can't be fooled. So don't be a fool. Corporate America continues to support fascism. What the hell is Fox News Channel about? It is fascism wall to wall. Minute to minute, the entire broadcast day and night, as is Limbaugh, as is, well, O'Reilly and Beck and Hannity, all those scum are on the Fox channel. So please. And to you, Truth Seeker, it's cool what Color of Change did. It's very cool. It's really great. But let us not go for this like a bunch of damn, morons and go, damn, we won. No, we didn't. Didn't win at all. And if you buy into that we won, you're just patting corporate America on its ass saying, good boy. No, don't do that. Don't do that. Thanks to our crew, Ben Birch, Sharon Gordy, Bruce Enberg, Kate Petrini, Bob Alexander, and Bridget Wolf. Kathy Bay is the executive producer. It's 10 before the hour. Email here, UPS and Chrysler have pulled all their ads from Fox. UPS and Chrysler have pulled all their ads from Fox. So far, I think those are probably the only two. There's a website, foxnewsboycott.com. foxnewsboycott.com. But again, if these advertisers are serious, which most of them are not, this is just theater, they will pull everything off of that filthy Nazi propaganda channel completely, forever. Let it rot. Charles is in Cambridge, Mass. Hey, Charles.
Hey, Mike. Great show this evening.
Oh, thanks.
I want to mention, last night I attended John Kerry's town hall meeting in Somerville, Massachusetts, at Somerville High School.
Yeah.
And he talked about the health care situation. He touched a little bit on the war as well. But what concerned me was he said there's no way the Democrats are going to get the votes. So the single payer, the public option, is basically off the table. And the plan he presented seemed to be duplicating the Massachusetts health plan on a national level. So basically what we have in this state is that all citizens are required to purchase their own health care if they don't already have it through their employer.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't buy it, you get fined,
right?
Which is idiotic. I can't afford it, so I have to pay $912 every time I file my taxes. And it just doesn't seem fair.
Well, it isn't. And my feelings about this, the overarching feeling I have about this, Charles, is very simple. You know, I've alienated an awful lot of liberals and leftists by insisting on continuing to support the Democratic Party. If the Democratic Party screws this one up, if there's not a public option in this health insurance reform plan, then I swear on my children's lives, I'm out of here where it concerns the Democratic Party. Never again will I back anything. If the Democratic Party passes a resolution demanding the immediate withdrawal from Iraq and Afghanistan, I still will not support them. This is it for me. You know, there's a make or break moment. I know a lot of liberals, a lot of progressives had their make or break moment a long time ago because I've gotten the emails, you know, hey, sucker, hey, dummy, hey, stupid, what are you doing? You know, it's over. Get away from the Democrats. You know, go this way, go that way. And, you know, my answer was always, look, I can't give up until I'm absolutely, utterly, completely, totally convinced that the Democratic Party no longer exists. With a 60-seat or 59-seat, whatever it is, they have enough the number of senators is great enough that they can get this through. There are also procedures to so they don't need 60. All they need is a simple majority. Their lead in the House is how many seats more than the Republicans do the Democrats have? 50, 60, 70? I have no idea. We have, the fact is, the Democrats control the House, the Senate, and the White House. I have watched with great frustration here the past few months with this ridiculous, just pointless attempt to reach out to these sons of bitches in the Republican Party. I don't know what Obama is trying to do. Maybe it's because it's his nature to compromise, to bring everybody into the tent. And maybe he's finally understood that this is a death match. This is a zero-sum game. They don't give a goddamn what he supports. It makes no difference. The Republicans will not back any of it unless it has to do with the payoff of their buddies on Wall Street, which is one of the most egregious mistakes, in my opinion, that Obama made. But this is it for me. It truly is. And Charles, thanks, man. We're just about out of time. I appreciate you checking in. This is it for me. And again, I take a blood oath that if there is not a clear public option available in whatever health care insurance reform goes through, then I become one of the worst enemies the Democratic Party's ever had. Because, you know, I've been a Democrat my entire life, ever since I've had political consciousness, since way before I was old enough to vote. You know, just from listening to my mother and my peers, my people, you know, the way I was brought up in a working class, heavily unionized feeder city for Detroit. So not that anybody gives a damn about my declarations, but I will make it publicly that the Democratic Party loses me completely. And I realize there's still some good souls in the Democratic Party, but I'm sorry. I've had enough. I've had more than enough. It's at that point that I join Bernie Sanders and become a complete, reconstructed, but a complete socialist. Completely. Democratic socialism, not totalitarian socialism. Democratic socialism. But that's where I will wind up. And I don't know what your opinion is about, not opinion, but what your take is on you Democrats who have been jerked around more often than these religious freaks have been jerked around by the Republicans. I've had enough. This is it for me. End of story. End of road. Brick wall. No going any further. It's bad enough. It's difficult enough trying to fight the Republicans to have to fight the leadership of your own party. You know, I got exhausted when Pelosi said, okay, we're in power now. We're not going to do anything. We're not going to impeach this son of a bitch. That was like, oh, my God. This is like, oh, my God, to the fourth power. I'm out of here. So we'll see what happens. It's just Mikey Malloy's little threat to nobody. It's just a statement inside my own head that happens to come out in a radio program. So goodbye, Democratic Party, forever if you don't put this together properly. And I won't blame Obama. You know, Obama's one person. I'm talking about the Democratic Party, especially as it's represented in the House and the Senate. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.